Ralph Nickleby is making house calls today. He visits a very extraordinary and miscellaneous collection of people, sometimes at great rich houses.
Good day. I'm sorry indeed to trouble you. I come on the matter of a few trifling bills.
Sometimes at small, poor homes.
Open up, you wretches! You owe me money, and I shall have it now, or you shall hang!
It is evening before Ralph begins to make his way home, and he is too busy thinking about the money he has collected to notice the shambling figure who steals noiselessly behind him. Suddenly, a violent storm blows up and drives Ralph under a tree for shelter. The figure approaches and taps Ralph on the shoulder.
Nickleby.
Ralph, astonished, falls back a pace or two. He looks at the withered man with the stooping body, hollow cheeks and shabby garments, and beneath the dirt and degradation is a face that Ralph knew from many years before.
Mr. Nickleby, will you hear the few words I have to say?
I'm obliged to wait here till the rain holds a little. If you talk, sir, I shall not put my fingers in my ears, though your talking may have the same effect as if I did.
I am hungry and in want. If the change that you see in me will not move you to pity, then you should know that even a crust of dry bread is beyond my reach today.
So? What of it?
I have been seeking you these 2 days. I am a miserable and wretched outcast, nearly 60 years old, and as destitute and helpless as a child of 6.
I am 60 years old, too, and am neither destitute nor helpless. Work. Don't make fine play-acting speeches about bread. Earn it.
How? Where? Show me the means. Help me.
I did once. I don't think I shall do so again.
It's 20 years since you had me arrested for an old advance of £10, including interest at 50%.
50%? That was uncommonly generous of me.
I got out of prison. You were glad enough to take me on as a clerk. One who wasn't over nice. One who knew something of both sides of the trade.
You begged and I consented. Besides, you were useful. Not too honest, not too delicate, not too nice of hand or heart, but useful.
Useful, indeed.
And you owed me money, as you still do.
I don't forget that old sore. Trust me. And I didn't forget it then. Because of that. And in the hope of making some money for myself, I took advantage of my position and possessed myself of a hold upon you, which I hoped you would give half of all you had to discover.
You? A hold upon me? I doubt it.
It's true. But before I could make use of it then, I was sent away a convict for 7 years for some poor trickery that came within the law. It was nothing compared with what you daily practice just outside its bounds.
Brooker, I have heard enough. Begone, or I shall have you sent away a second time.
Money is on your side. Hunger and thirst are on mine. You may drive an easy bargain.
I shall drive no bargain at all. Whatever knowledge you supposedly have, keep it or publish it to the world if you want. I do not care.
You shall regret this, Nickleby.
Indeed, I shall not. I know the world, and the world knows me. I am reviled or threatened every day. But things roll on the same, and I don't grow poorer either.
I talk not of money. What I know concerns certain people of your own name. Surely they are dear to you.
They are not. No, they are far from dear to me. If you had come as a common beggar, I might have thrown the sixpence to you. But since you try to palm these stale tricks upon me, I'll not part with a halfpenny, not to save you from rotting. Good day.
Ralph marches away, leaving Brooker, his old friend and enemy, standing in the rain.
I shall not forget this, Nickleby.
Ralph, on the other hand, has forgotten already. He meets up with 2 business acquaintances and then makes his way to a meeting he has been looking forward to all day. Meanwhile, in the Nickleby cottage, the parlour is full of people and laughter.
We leave London tomorrow night, and as I did not know that I was ever so happy in all my days, Mr. Nickleby.
Glass,
oh, ding! but I will take another glass to our next merry meeting. Your health.
Your health. Now, what about that song you promised to sing for us, eh, John?
Oh, aye. The ladies always weep when I sing this song. Ready?
Absolutely.
Mr. Browdy makes several ungainly movements in his chair, singles out one particular fly on the ceiling, fixes his eye upon it, and opens his mouth.
Were I laid on Greenland's coast, and in my arms embraced my lass, warm amidst eternal frost. Ding me! You have more visitors.
Who can it be at this hour?
Good evening to you all.
I shall not breathe the air that you corrupt, Uncle. Therefore I suggest you leave immediately, or I shall force you to do so.
Stay, before you say another word, hear me.
Then speak quickly, and take care thou do not put up angry blood.
How can you stand there looking so calmly upon those who know your black and dastardly heart?
We shall see who has a black and dastardly heart when you have heard what I have to say.
What's that shadow outside the door? He has someone else with him. It's the schoolmaster. Come on, show thyself, man. Do not be shamefaced.
Hearing this, Mr. Squeers, who has been lingering in the passage, slides in a somewhat undignified manner, blinking his eye rapidly. Ralph turns to Nicholas.
I come here on an act of humanity.
Can I believe that?
I come here to restore a parent to his child. Aye, sir, to restore a father to his son. A son who has been kidnapped by you, with the base design of robbing him of any little wretched pittance of which he might become possessed.
In that you know you lie.
In this I know I speak the truth. I have his father here, Mr. Snorley. Mr. Snorley, you may enter and greet your long-lost son.
Mr. Snorley enters and makes straight for Smike. On reaching him, he hesitates a moment, and then tucks the poor fellow's head under his arm in a most uncouth and awkward embrace.
Who are you?
Oh, Smike! Oh, my son! How good it is to hold you at last, my son!
Be composed, sir. You have him back now.
Got him? Oh, haven't I got him? Oh, yes, here he is. My flesh and blood. Flesh and blood.
There's very little flesh on him, to be sure.
The first thing I shall do for my dear son is to beat him severely for running away from his best friends, the Squeers.
Parental instinct, no doubt, sir.
This must be so. But my heart yearns towards him. And I feel I could... Why, I don't know what I couldn't do to him in the hanger of a father.
Nicholas looks from Snorley to Squeers and then to his uncle, torn between disgust, doubt and surprise.
Let go, leave me alone, Nicholas!
Smike manages to escape Snorley's grip and rushes to Nicholas.
Nicholas, don't let them take me, I don't want to go. Let me stay, please. I don't want to stay with you. I want to live and die beside you.
If you are this boy's father, look at the wreck he has been made. And tell me that you could think of sending him back to that loathsome den from which I brought him.
Indeed I could. It is the best place for him.
Then you cannot truly be his father.
Oh, but he can, and I can prove it. Mr. Snorley, you had a son by your first wife?
I did. And there he stands.
We'll show that presently. You and your wife separated when he was a year old. 2 years later, you received a communication from her that he was dead, and you believed her. Is that so?
Yes. But now, the joy of seeing my son...
Be rational, sir, pray. This is business, and emotions will only interfere with it. This wife died a year and a half ago after writing a deathbed confession, owning up to her lie and saying it was all done to wound you. Is that the case?
That is the case. Correct in every particular, sir.
In fact, the boy lived, but was weak and imperfect, and was therefore sent to a cheap school in Yorkshire to be looked after.
Just so. Just so.
The school was Mr. Squeers' school. The boy was left in the name of Smike, and Smike lived there happily until this kidnapper came and removed him and brought him here.
That is not proof. That is mere fantasy.
You are right. Here. Here is the proof. Here is the marriage certificate, the birth certificate, Mrs. Snorley's letters, and every other paper that can support these statements. You may study them all. The coach is waiting. We can take Master Snorley with us now, if that suits everyone.
That would be the best for me, and of course, my son. Oh, my dear boy.
No, no, please, don't make me. Don't make me go, please, I beg.
This is a cruel thing. Do parents bring children into the world for this?
Do parents bring children into the world for Mr. Squeers to kick and beat and whip and torture?
Never you mind, sir.
Ah, never I mind. It's nobody minding that keeps such men as that afloat.
Mr. Squeers ignores this insult and advances upon the cowering Smike.
Now then, what do you think you're doing? Dang it! Do not come treading all over me, man. Have a care.
And John Browdie jerks his elbow into the chest of Mr. Squeers. Mr. Squeers reels backwards and, unable to recover his balance, he knocks Ralph Nickleby off his chair. In the midst of all the noise and confusion, Squeers manages to grab Smike and is hauling him out of the room.
No! Help me!
Smike, no!
Nicholas removes Smike from Squeers' grip, takes Squeers by the collar and shakes him until his three teeth rattle.
It is time you left this house, Mr. Squeers. Fare you well.
Aye.
Will you two gentlemen follow of your own accord, or do you need to be thrown out also?
I want my son.
Your son chooses to remain here, and he shall.
You will not give him up?
I will not give him up against his wishes to be the victim of such brutality.
You, Smike, are an unnatural, ungrateful, unlovable son. But I shall have you in the end. Do not doubt it.
Leave now and never return, sir. You are not welcome here.
I know why you are angry. Because your pathetic hopes are destroyed. This boy is the weak, imbecile son of a poor, petty tradesman. He has no inheritance for you to steal from him. So we shall see how your sympathy melts before plain matter of fact, shan't we?
I shall never desert him.
Trust me, sir, that I never supposed you would give him up tonight. Pride, obstinacy, your reputation for fine feeling were all against it. These must be brought down, sir, lowered, crushed, and they shall be soon.
I doubt it.
Oh, no. I shall see that it happens.
You would do that, would you, to your own nephew?
Yes, and be assured I shall take great pleasure in it.
You are an unnatural man and a disgrace to the Nickleby name.
Say what you like while you can, for I shall break your spirit and I shall crush you, Nicholas. This I swear.